we've been talking about a Christian's worldview, and we've been kind of focusing on an aspect of the Christian's worldview that deals with art and culture and human expression. I sent you a link to an interesting article, or an article that I found interesting, that talks about the Christian's worldview. Invite you to take some time to read that if you have the opportunity. We've talked a little bit about several ideas from Ephesians, the fifth chapter. So I just want to kind of tonight continue that discussion and extend it just a little bit, I hope. We've been talking extensively about our language. And we're also going to talk about behavior that comes from Ephesians 5, but it's behavior that's expressive behavior. So let's continue to talk about some of the language ideas that are prohibited to us. Remember, we began by really defining a couple of ideas. First, the kinds of language and behavior that ought to characterize us. And then we looked at different words that the apostle uses here in Ephesians 5, verses 1 through 20, to talk about language. We talked about filthiness, about foolish talking, about jesting. We talked about using language that's not convenient. And convenient means not things that are like they're easy to access, but it's the things that are not fit and proper. And then the last thing that I'd like to talk about with language, and of course we talked about using the name of the Lord in vain, but I wanted to talk about this at some length because we need to understand that there's more to our language than simply avoiding gross profanity. Now, we do avoid gross profanity. We don't go around dropping F-bombs like everybody else that lives around us. And I have to admit, it does seem that people that I listen to on the TV, athletes, entertainers, it just seems like their language is filled with all kinds of gross profanity. We're not talking about gross profanity. We do a pretty good job of avoiding gross profanity. But we need to extend that to thinking about some other things. And one of the things that he talked about is talking about shameful things that are done in secret. If you go over to Romans, the first chapter, you read about a culture that in many ways is very much like ours. And he describes a lot of the shameful things that they were engaged in. I have to admit that I am drawn to a certain kind of news feeds that come across my desk. I subscribe to a lot of different news sources. And, you know, it's always been said in the news world, if it bleeds, it leads. And what they're trying to say is that if there's something that catches your eye, that's what the news programs are going to lead with. That's what news organizations are going to stress, whether you're reading conservative news sources, liberal news sources, Christian news sources, it doesn't really matter. If it bleeds, it leads. And I'm trying to wean myself of that tendency to be attracted to salacious kinds of stories. I don't know if you're like me, but when I read the leads, or at least the teasers that are in the news feeds that I get, it seems that they word it so that you'll be attracted to it and you'll read it, and then you find out, well, that's not really what was going on. They talk about all kinds of things, but it's a shame to speak of some things that are done in secret. Yes, those things happen, but we don't need to fill our speech, fill our thoughts with those kinds of things endlessly. I think we have to wean ourselves, and I know that I do. I have to wean myself off of those titillating, salacious kinds of headlines and stop constantly thinking about those kinds of things. Yes, people commit murders, but I don't have to read about that. People commit rape. People commit burglaries. But somehow I have to get beyond that. I don't need to let those kinds of things dominate my language. Any other thoughts? Anybody else have trouble with that?
Dean?
Yeah, go ahead, Carol.
Oh, one thing that I was thinking about, the first time I ever heard the F word, I was in junior high walking down the hall and somebody said this word, and the way that they said it, I knew it wasn't a good word, because their whole body gets all screwed up with anger and hate and all of these other things, and it's as much the anger and the hate and the disrespecting other people that this language does that is wrong.
That's a really interesting idea. Our language tends to be a reflection of some underlying kinds of thought processes.
Well, I try to stay away. I read the headlines, but I don't go in depth in all of them, because the first two or three paragraphs, you've got it all, and I don't need to know all that gross thing that's going on. But I do like to know what's going on. And I know I asked my mother-in-law, I said, isn't there any good news? Isn't it babies born today? Or did somebody win an award? What? Why? But it is hard. So I do the funny papers and the puzzles and read the headlines. And I do like to know what's going on in my neighborhood. And there are a lot of things that, you know, bad things, and you wonder if they're going to happen to you. And then you just think, well, you don't need to dwell on that. It's just a passing thing.
Good point.
Well, the unfortunate thing, I think, is that when you hear language like that repeatedly, it just gets in your head. And it's every time that you hear it, it seems that it's less of a shock, and it just gets into your head, you know, and you can't avoid that. You hear it so often.
Just have to tune it out.
Hey, you were going to say something?
Yes, when Carol was talking, I thought of the verse, for out of the heart the mouth speaketh.
Excellent.
Alluded to that, yeah.
Excellent point. And that talks about our language being a reflection of what's in our heart.
Yeah.
I think it also, in a sense, works the other way. Our language also impacts our heart. And we begin to think in those ways. So we just need to be very careful about language. And it's, you know, it's more than just avoiding the gross profanity that seems to characterize the world. Most Christians I know don't have a real problem with avoiding gross profanity. Now, sometimes if you've just recently been converted and that's the language that you're used to using, it just kind of comes out, even though you're trying to control it. But having the kind of language that ought to characterize Christians is a lot more than that. So let's go on to talk a little bit about behavior. He also talks about whoremongers. This in Ephesians 5. Let me get there in my app. This is in verse 5. This is one of the things that we avoid. It's one of the things that would cause us to not have an inheritance in heaven. This is a really interesting word. It's related to the word from which we get pornography. This word, pornos, right here. It's a man or woman who prostitutes their body to another's lust for hire. This is a lot broader than the term that we think of when we talk about a prostitute. That's someone that has sex for money. This idea of being a whoremonger would also include somebody who performs in drag. A man who would perform in drag, dressed as a woman, for another's lust. That's interesting. That person isn't having sex for money. So they're not what we think of as being a prostitute, but they are being a whoremonger. It was a word that was used in secular language to refer to male prostitutes in the temples. It is also a word that does include people who engage in unlawful sexual intercourse. But it's a lot, the problem begins a lot earlier than someone who has unlawful sexual intercourse. It also includes someone who performs to excite another's unjustified lust. And I think pornography in my mind is becoming one of the really serious problems that exists in our culture. And it's not just men who view pornography. It's it's a surprising number of women who view pornography. And they engage in viewing pornography, not just in a secret place. What amazed me when I started reading about pornography is the number of people that do it at work on their work computers. And we're not talking about people that are working from home. These are people that are working in offices. Not to pick on the IRS, but they are the folks that work for the IRS are very closely monitored because they have access to a lot of really personal data about just about anybody. So their habits on the computer are very closely monitored to make sure that they're not doing anything that's illegal. And what they discovered was a huge number of people that worked at the IRS were viewing pornography on their work computer during work hours. This is becoming a plague on our society, and we have to respond to it. We have to find a way to encourage people not to do this.
Dean?
Yes.
It seems to me that the entertainment that's out there right now, not all of it, but an awful lot of it, fits in this category of warmongering because it's so sexual. And, I mean, it just is... Yeah, it's disgusting is what it is.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of watching the Kardashians. I've never seen them on TV. I don't know what their show is like. But the things that come through my news feeds, I can't imagine that these folks are providing wholesome entertainment. I think that they're performing to excite the lusts of someone else. And there's a lot of that kind of stuff. I've never seen it, but I see advertisements for it all the time. What's the show about Naked and Afraid? Apparently they take people out into the wilderness and they leave them there naked, and then they film everything that happened to them, and I think they discreetly cover at least some parts of their bodies. But I can't imagine that show would make it if it was just Alone and Afraid. We as Christians have to find a way to avoid that kind of thing. I've talked before about so much of the advertising world is built on sexualizing just about everything that happens. Yeah, I walk through the malls, and I used to go to Abercrombie and Fitch because they had really good clothes that were just casual kinds of clothes. They were expensive, but they were the kinds of things that lasted. You could buy a shirt at Abercrombie and Fitch, and it wasn't anything trendy or anything like that. It was just real plain Jane stuff, but it lasted. And then something happened, and they decided that they wanted to start advertising to a younger crowd. And in all honesty, excuse me, their window displays to me are over the top. It seems like their window displays just kind of border on pornography. Now, it's not like used to be, what was it, Fredericks of Hollywood, or what's the women's underwear store now? It's I don't even remember the name of it, but I was a little shocked, and I could avoid those kinds of stores, but then it turned into Abercrombie and Fitch and, you know, Old Navy, places where you could go to buy just clothes. I think this is becoming a real problem.
I've always remembered that our bodies are the temple of God and we're supposed to take care of it. And then there's another thing when we're talking about people using their time. The devil's workshop is idle hands. Only I think I got it backwards. But idle hands are the workshop of the devil, because that's when he goes, whenever you're in the mood or whatever, or you're just sitting there and things come through your mind. I don't usually sit still, but a lot of people do. I like to be busy, 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 and I don't have time to think of stuff like that. So, or we don't get to go shopping now either, but I agree with you wholeheartedly on that. Whoops, there's.
It's really, I find it really unfortunate.
Me too.
You know, I'm kind of past the age where I'm looking for clothes for my teenage daughters. But I do remember when Mandy and Jenny were that age, it was becoming very difficult to find clothes that were appropriate. And clothes that just were not for that purpose. Now, the amount of your skin that you expose has very little to do with this. The crux of the matter is so behaving as to excite the lust of another. You know, I watched the Chinese divers in the Olympics, and the women divers that do the pairs diving, and I'm amazed at what they can do. It really doesn't occur to me that they're wearing bathing suits. I'm just amazed at what they can do. I don't think that they are clothing themselves in a way to excite lust. I think they're just clothing themselves in a way that accepts the fact that they're going to be smacking into the water and they have to be able to get out of it. I think that this is a big problem. Then the next thing that he says that we must avoid here. Those words that we don't use very often in our ordinary conversation, so we have to kind of define it. Now, there were two senses in which you could be an unclean person. One of the senses had to do with the Levitic law. And in the Levitical law, if you had touched the body of a dead man or woman, you were unclean for a certain period of time. That was a ceremonial uncleanness. I don't see that kind of uncleanness repeated in the New Testament. There's no indication to me that if you touch the body of a dead man, you're unclean and you cannot worship. You are ceremonially prohibited from participating in some aspects of assemblies. So I don't think that's what the Apostle Paul is talking about, becoming an unclean person. Because, you know, that's a very real definition for this concept, but I don't think that's the point. I think the point is, in a moral sense, those who are unclean in thought and in life. Again, that's more than the ceremonial kind of uncleanness. That's a real sense. I don't mean to minimize it, but it's a person who is unclean in his thought and his life. That doesn't go away after 8 days or after you've made a sacrifice and you've presented yourself to the priest, like ceremonial uncleanness does. This is a person who is unclean about everything. Other thoughts about uncleanness? It's just a word that we're not generally speaking going to use in our conversation, mostly because those kinds of ceremonial laws that they were aware of don't exist for us. And so it's hard for us to think, okay, this is unclean, and just extend that out to not an uncleanness of the flesh, but an uncleanness of the mind. So we don't talk about that kind of thing very often. But the Apostle Paul thought it was important enough that he included it here.
Dean?
Yes.
That reminds me of when Jesus said that if a man thinks it in his heart that he's guilty of adultery, not waiting until he does the act. So that's the uncleanness already comes into your heart before you act.
Yeah. A man that looks on a woman to lust after her has committed adultery with her already in his heart. So you have the whoremonger who performs to excite lust, and then the unclean person who views everything that he views through a sexual lens or through an unclean kind of lens. So it's as if you have both sides of this being discussed. Don't behave in such a way as to intentionally incite other people's lust. And for goodness sakes, don't have your mind in the gutter and thinking about everything like that when you look at anything that you look at. So it's both sides of this same kind of behavior. Now, next thing he talks about here in Ephesians 5 at verse 5, and again, I think this is an issue of behavior, not so much language. This is a man who is covetous, and he says that amounts to idolatry. Covetousness, which is idolatry. I I think we have a tendency to minimize sometimes covetousness. And this, because of the way he says it, puts covetousness into a category that strikes us as being as completely evil as it really is. We look at covetousness or a person who values things instead of valuing God. And we sometimes say, well, that person is just really trying to get ahead. But that's not it. This is a person who bestows on money and things the kind of affection that he ought to have for God. I've said many times that the way that you can determine what's most important in your life is to think about those things that you would be most uncomfortable without. And a lot of people have said that the thing that they would be most uncomfortable without is their phone. Yeah, that these cell phones that we all carry, nothing wrong with cell phones, just like there's nothing wrong with a landline. Sometimes these things get out of hand for us. And we would rather be without God than without our phones. And you see people walking down the street all the time, glued to their cell phone, oblivious to the things that are going on around them. And sometimes it's kind of funny because they trip and fall into a pool in the middle of a mall because they've got their face glued to their iPhone. Or their cell phone. I shouldn't pick on iPhones. And I laugh. But it's really not funny. We should not value anything more than we value God. I talked to someone who said, and he worked in the oil fields. He was given an opportunity to go to Saudi Arabia and work for a year in Saudi Arabia in the oil fields. He turned it down. The reason that he turned it down was they said, you cannot bring your Bible. Now, he'd have made about four times the salary that he was making, and he was working on the North Slope, where they make really high, you know, six-figure salaries for being a flow station operator. That's because they work so many hours. And they work hard. I don't begrudge them the pay at all. And I don't begrudge someone the opportunity to better himself and to make more money. But he turned it down because he said, I had to work 7/12 every week. That meant that I could never worship. I couldn't take my Bible. And it was more important to me that I have God in my life than it was to think about just how much money I could make. Now, I know, you know, I know that if you're a young person starting out, or if you're in some professions, if you're a doctor, That's one of the things that happens if you're a doctor, you're on call. And that means that you're going to miss being able to assemble sometimes. I know that that's the case. If you're a fireman, you work this rotating shift that only firemen seem to be able to get straight. You're on 3 days and you're off 3 days, or on 3 days and you're off 2 days. And every so often it turns around so that you have to work on Sundays. That's something that happens. If you're a young person, you're just starting out, your first job, yeah, I can pretty much guarantee that you're going to get the worst shifts when you're starting out as a young person in the working world. And you're going to be the guy who always pulls the weekend shifts. That's the way it goes. I wish it wasn't that way. And I wish everybody could find a job where they didn't have to work shifts. But that's not the case. I don't think a person who takes a job because they're young and they know that that's the way that it has to start out, but that's not where they want to stay. That person is not valuing things more than he's valuing God. But sometimes we can get caught up in this. And I have to admit, when I decided to go back to school, and that meant that I could not continue to preach, there were some people who said that I had given up on God because I wanted to go back to school. I wanted to get a job where I could build retirement, and many of the things that just weren't possible when I was preaching. And that wasn't the case, that I wanted to leave God out of my life. And here I am preaching again. You know, who knew? But covetousness can take hold of us. And we can be covetous about a lot of things, more than just money. Sometimes we can become covetous, not necessarily about things, but about the way that we spend our time. Now, I like to fancy myself as a person who plays golf. Tiger Woods would look at my golf game and say, well, that's not golf. But I like to play golf. I like to go fishing. And sometimes people can let those kinds of things replace God as what's most important in their life. We have to be very careful about these kinds of things. And then Strong mentions this. He says this word, particularly idolater, would be used of anyone, even a Christian, who is a participant in any way in the worship of the heathen, especially one who attends their sacrificial feasts and eats of the remains of their sacrifices, those that were offered victims. And of course, this was the case among many of the heathen religions during the period of the first century. they made sacrifices, and then those sacrifices were served to the participants. It's interesting that that was not the way that the Jewish system worked. The only sacrifice that the Jewish participants participated in and ate themselves was the Passover. That was an interesting kind of comparison to what was going on in the heathen world. Any other thoughts about this idea of covetousness, which makes you an idolater?
Dean, would you say that when Adam chose Eve over God, that he was covetous of with her as because he replaced her God with her?
It's an interesting idea. I never thought about it that way, Carol, but I think that could be the case. I don't know that it's ever biblically described that way, but if you take the concept of idolatry, it makes sense that it could be applied to a relationship with other people as well.
Because God says you have to hate your father, mother, brother, or love less. It's a different word, but I mean, it's a lot more demanding of this love of God than most people think.
It's a good point. It's a good point. And I have a lot of respect for women, particularly, who find themselves married to someone who says, you have to choose between worshiping God and being with me. And they choose worshiping God. And I have a lot of respect for the men that are married to women who are faithful Christians, who support them in what they do, and who never get in the way, who, even though they don't have a relationship with God, they make plans so that their wives, who do have a relationship with God, will be able to persist in that relationship. And when they make plans to travel, they always make their travel plans around their wife being able to worship. I have a great deal of respect for men that do that. And I know that not every woman who's married to someone who does not share their faith has that easy a time. And it also applies to men who are married to someone who's not a Christian, but it seems to be women who are in that position more often than men, or at least the women are stronger in their relationship with God than men are, and they refuse to be drawn away. And so we see a lot of women who are in almost every church that I've been a part of who find themselves in that position. Well, let's talk about the last one from Ephesians 5. He says in verse 7, be not therefore partakers with them. Don't have any fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. That's the way he describes it in verse 11. He says, but rather reprove them. Fellowship is joint participation. Now let's think back to phones for just a minute. The fact that ungodly people use phones doesn't mitigate against a godly person using a phone. They both use the same phone. It's the way that they use it that you're having fellowship with. And I think that's a really important idea. We can't focus on doing the same thing that an ungodly person might do. It's the thought that underlies it. So I use an iPhone. The most ungodly person you can think of uses an iPhone. Pretty much just like mine. Has the same ringtone on it. His phone looks just like mine. I don't use my phone the same way he does. I don't have fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness simply because I'm using the same, or I'm engaging in the same kind of behavior. And I think that's a really important concept for those of us who are Christians. You know, the Amish have said, we're not going to drive cars because we don't want to be like, well, they call them the English. That's the people that aren't Amish. We don't want to be like the English. They drive cars and we're not going to. So they ride around in horse-drawn buggies. I think they've missed the point. They say, we're not going to wear brightly colored clothes because that's what the English do. And it's not just women, it's men as well. Men wear black and white. I mean, they have no colors at all. You would never see an Amish man wearing a Hawaiian print shirt. That's because the English, the sinners, those people wear Hawaiian print shirts all the time. And I'm not going to do that. I think they missed the point. Just like people say, oh, sinners, they use iPhones or cell phones. They make their cell phone into an idol. So I'm not going to have a cell phone because I don't want to have any fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. Well, any thoughts about that? Charlie, as we're finishing this section, I saw Charlie looking at his cell phone.
My wife's got it doing something we don't want him to do, and she asked me to fix it.
Well, thanks, everybody, for your participation this evening, and You know, I know we've covered a lot of different thoughts, and I presented some things that I think are critically important. I know that I may have raised more questions than I have given answers, but I think that's kind of the way that it ought to be. We ought to examine our lives, and we ought to ask ourselves questions.